I'm going to offer some reflections on the text, and at the end I'll hold a period of silence and then I'll ring the bell and invite you to share stories or experiences that might have been sparked by the text or by the reflections I offer. And I'm going to start by playing and then inviting you to sing with me a verse of a song. I'm kind of liking this groove, so I'm just going with it. But I didn't bring my upright bass because it's so tricky to carry on the subway, so I brought my small acoustic bass. And we'll see if I get the notes okay. It's a song that isn't about salt or light. Sorry. But by the time I get through where I want to go with you and reflecting on this text, it will make some sense how it resonates for me, and I hope for you. And we'll see, we may sing it again when we get to the end. I don't usually start with the text. I usually start with the context, like where we are, what we're experiencing. But I want to start with the text this week, partly because I think it doesn't really easily make sense without another text set next to it. So I want to open up this text in relationship to another later text in Matthew's gospel as a way to deepen our approach to the text before I connect it to, in this case, what's going on right here in the neighborhood. The thing that strikes me about the text is it's so easy to focus on the salt and the light. And in fact, at Waffle Trip this morning, that's exactly what we did. We sang "This Little Light of Mine," and the kids put salt in water and talked about diffusion, which was hilarious. And we do that because they're so concrete, like salt, light, you know. But I think it's really interesting and actually very important in the text what those sentences or phrases end with. So look at the text, if you will, with me for a minute, and you'll see what Matthew is doing here. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. When you put the light on the lampstand, it gives light to all in the house. There's this beautiful expansiveness to the, I would say, the for whom of the salt, the for whom of the light. It's for the whole earth, the salt. The light is for all. And I think that's really important to just rest with. It picks up on the prophetic images that Matthew's Jesus so often call upon as imagery. And then it goes on through this description kind of how Jesus is intending this to be a fulfillment of the scriptures. And this last sentence is what I think invites us to like say, okay, so how do we interpret this? Where do we go to make sense of this? For I tell you, in verse 20, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. That sounds to me kind of foreboding. Like, unless you like surpass the righteousness of the super righteous, then you're not in. And we just had this like, but the salt's for the whole earth, the light's for all in the house. But then like I have this huge bar I have to get over in order to be in. Well, this curious teaching to his followers, to all who are listening to him, is answered at the end of Matthew's gospel in the 23rd chapter when Jesus is in Jerusalem. And there's all sorts of scheming on the parts of these very same scribes and Pharisees trying to draw Jesus into rhetorical traps that would condemn him or that would invite him to condemn himself. And he's talking to his disciples and sort of putting a fine point on his argument with them, his complaint with them. And it's a key feature of how in Matthew's community, which was a very Jewish-oriented community, how they made sense of being followers of Jesus. He says, Matthew says in chapter 23, then Jesus said to the crowd and to his disciples, the scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. Therefore do whatever they teach you and follow it, but do not do as they do, for they do not practice what they teach. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on the shoulders of others, but they themselves are unwilling to lift a finger to move them. So in a sense, he's calling them out on hypocrisy for saying you should do all these difficult things, but then not doing them themselves. And so when he says at the end of our passage, for I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And I think it's interesting, you know, just to transpose kingdom of heaven as like realm of God. They on purpose didn't want to say the word God all the time, and so they would transpose heaven as a way to speak of the realm of God. Like living in God's intention, if you will, requires practicing what you preach. Doing the thing that you say is important. And showing by your actions your character, your intention, who you are. And so his criticism of them isn't about the teachings. He's in agreement with them about the teachings. And that's why he says, I've come to fulfill the law, not dismiss it. But fulfill it in his walk, in his actions. So I think that this frustration that he has is about their debate about what it is to be faithful people together. And I think that's something that then we open up as a question for ourselves, like how do we as individuals, how do we as a community, in a sense, take that which we have received, this life in Christ, this way of following, and actually walk it. And so I wanted, because it's Black History Month, because there are beautiful and important civil rights heroes who have roots here in New York, I wanted to just talk about a person who walked the talk, and then go from a little bit about her story to some African-American women in our neighborhood who this past week invited us to participate in walking our talk, the Gowanus Coalition, the Neighborhood Coalition for Justice, around city rezoning. So let me pass out this gorgeous picture of Dorothy Irene Haight. I think I have enough for every couple people to have a copy to look at. I just love seeing a person. There enough to share?
Lovely. She lived 98.
Yeah, she lived such a long life. She was. Early when she was in high school, she came to New York City from Pennsylvania and was protesting in Times Square against lynching. And she participated in civil rights leadership her whole life. She was a executive at the YMCA, where I go in the morning, 135th Street in Harlem, and advocated for equality in the YMCA system for women. She was the chairperson of the Negro Women's, what's the full name of it? It's called the National Council of Negro Women. She was the chairperson of that civil rights organization for 40 years. She was one of the architects of the March on Washington with Dr. King, even though she wasn't offered a speaking role. And she was, at the end of her life, celebrated by President Obama and invited to the White House. And so it's an example, to me, it's a beautiful example, and you can see this in some of the quotes in her memoir about her life, that she said, you know, you can't do something just because you're going to get the limelight for it, you do it because it's right. And she tried to do that her whole life, fighting for more access for women and for African Americans. And her story in Harlem and in New York and in DC and nationally and internationally is an example of the kind of civil rights leaders that this country, especially at a time like this, when there's so much ugly, we need to, I think, lift up and say, this is what a life can look like. This is what a life can look like. And whole city rezoning, neighborhood rezoning process is happening in our neighborhood. And it's been going on throughout New York City. And the point of it is to rezone in order to allow for high-end development. It's already happening. All up and down the Gowanus Canal, up along where the subways are. Am I pointing the right direction? Yeah, up this way. High rise, brand new. Some are up, new ones are being built. And at the same time, just up the street are about 2,400 units of New York City public housing, the Gowanus houses and a couple of other adjacent places. And they have organized this group, the leaders of it are Monica Underwood and Cherry Shiver, who've lived there respectively 53 and 37 years, and are the co-chairs of this organization. And they're organizing because of the fact that this rezoning is completely leaving them out of the conversation about what needs to happen with housing in this neighborhood. And a focus on high-rise housing, luxury housing, at the same time as they have $150 million of deferred maintenance that needs to happen on their homes. They said in their press release this week, and I learned about this because of our congregant, Betsy Cannon, who's active with them and was present at the release of their key priorities for the mayor and trying to push back on this rezoning process. They said, we've witnessed the steady decline of living conditions and disrepair in our homes and in our buildings that are owned and managed by the New York City Housing Authority. We are enduring a worsening public safety, health, and housing crisis. We and our neighbors in the Gowanus houses and the Warren Street houses have been forced to endure broken and leaky pipes, peeling paint, heatless apartments. You can just imagine the list goes on. And they're asking for creative partnerships so that all of the money being produced by the rezoning that allows developers to bring high-rises also creates funding to revitalize their housing, revitalize their community center, make this a good place for them to live as well. And we're a partner. St. Lydia's is a partner in the Gowanus Neighborhood Coalition for Justice. And I just want to name that that's a part of what Jesus is asking for us who are his body in the world to be that kind of neighbor, to be committed to, in a sense, as this text puts it, the one that I read, when heavy burdens are tied up and their hearts are laid on the shoulders of others, to notice that and to be alongside them and to seek to take those burdens off. And it's organizing that does that. It's allyship, showing up, being partners, being in the neighborhood. And as I live into this role as interim pastor here and learn this neighborhood and walk back and forth on Bond Street as I come and go, as many of you do, this is, a beautiful opportunity for us to be followers of the way, to be people who are salt and light in the neighborhood, who are not like the scribes and the Pharisees who want to teach righteousness but then just seek publicity for themselves for opportunities to sit in the nice chairs to be seen as pious. You can imagine the political equivalents of that. Trying to get the photo shot with the news media, but not actually showing up to do the work. So it's an invitation and it's also a gift for us to be here at 304 Bond Street, to be here in the Gowanus neighborhood, to be in partnership with this organization, with these women who are leading this movement, and to claim this moment, just as Dorothy claimed her moment to do the work, for us to claim this moment, to join behind Betsy, who's leading us, and to be present with and for the neighborhood in this work. Let me just hold a moment of silence and I'll ring the bell and invite your stories and experiences that might have been sparked by this.